Three, two, one.
Hello and welcome to the Devon Dice Podcast, episode 64, recorded on the 19th of March 2017. This podcast is where we talk about board games, lots of board games, and we hope you enjoy it.
Yes, everyone, the show has returned. Devon Dice is back on the air. After a little hiatus for no reason at all, except for I couldn't be asked.
And I'm the other side of the world.
But I am. And as you can hear, I'm actually graced by his presence. Lewis is here in the background.
Hello, everyone. Live from New Zealand.
Yes. I think it's been a little bit busy for both of us. Things happening everywhere. But we finally got together. We made the timelines kind of converge. And we've... hopefully can just bring you a nice brief short podcast for you to listen to and find out what us Devon Dice crew have been up to lately.
Yes, indeed. Sounds exciting.
Still sunny over there, is it, Lewis?
It is. Autumn's definitely setting in, but it's strange because the sun's really strong here. So like the air is quite cool. So like in the mornings, it's like, you know, sort of less than 10 degrees. But then the sun comes out in the afternoon, it can get all the way up to the 20s. It can nice. Change within the space of a day.
Nice. Sounds nice. Not jealous at all with all this rain, wind, and God knows what else has been going on down here. But
So we haven't had much of that.
It's going to be hopefully a quick-ish podcast because like time... things to do. Well, Lewis has got a whole day to do and I've got an evening to get back to. So let's get on with it. So
let's do it.
It's been a couple of months. I've been playing a few games, not as much as I would like to with things going on, but I've been getting out there and getting some new games played. I actually got to play Wingspan from Stonemaier Games finally after Sam bigged it up on one of the last podcasts we did back in 2010. I think it was January.
Oh, yeah, how is that? A lot of people have been ranting about that, haven't they?
Well, I have to be honest, and I have to say, I think there's a lot of hype behind it.
Yeah.
And it's an okay game.
Yeah.
I mean, I've played it twice.
It's not actually designed by Jamie Stiegmeier, though, is it?
No, it's designed by a lady. I can't think of her name. This is her first game she's designed. And I have to admit, it is a good game, but it's not this exceptional thing that everyone must play, in my opinion. Everyone should play it to kind of experience it, but I don't see why everyone's going mad over it. I have to say the components are top-notch, and I actually opened someone's copy. They've already opened it, and I was like, oh, can we play this? And they're like, yeah. So I started opening myself and just like open it. It was like an experience in itself. Like the components are top quality. Like,
yeah,
that I think we mentioned before that this is like what used to be Dave's of Wonders kind of thing was putting the best components into a game possible. Stonemaier have now taken that baton and is running with it because the rule book is made of like cloth. It feels like it's like so nice. It feels it's paper, but fiber paper. I'm trying to think now.
But
it just feels like it's so textile and like it's like and the smell that the components just hits you and it's just like. It is amazing. It's an experience, just opening and experiencing the components. And the game, it's very simple. It's family level. And I enjoy my games, but I'm not enamoured with it that I need to own my own copy. I'd be quite happy to play other people's copy, and I wouldn't say no, but it's nothing. There's not a spark there. There's nothing like that said to me like, wow, this is amazing. I need to own this. I need to make sure I have a copy and I need to show everyone. It's just like, yeah, it's a game and it works and it's interesting. It suffers your pet hate.
What's that?
That there's a deck of cards and someone could draw this great card and you'll be sat there going, why am I not getting cards like that?
Ugh. Oh, I hate games like that. I already hate it.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. Is there not even a market?
Kind of. There's three on display, or you can draw from the top. And there's only three types of card. There's one where once you when you play it, the power goes off. There's one where if it's in the line, you activate the line, the powers go off. And there's another one that is kind of passive. When someone else does an action, that card goes off. And they're rare as anything to do. And they're quite handy because like someone says, oh, I'm going to do this action. He's like, oh, you're doing that. I can do this.
Yeah.
And the two games I played, not once have I had those cards.
So it's like I was about to ask, is there much player interaction? So I guess it's those special
it's
cards
about that they've added. That's about played. The most player interaction there is.
It sounds awful, Joel. It sounds like you're describing my most awful game.
So yeah, it's a 7, I think.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. I mean, the components help it out, and like the detail they put into it with all the birds and things going on, and there's little nuggets of information on the cards about the birds you're putting down. Some of it's quite funny, and some of it's actually quite intelligent. That's really nice. I mean, the artwork.
So what's the idea? You're like collecting birds or something.
You're bird spotters, and you're trying to collect an abattoir of birds. I think you're meant to be collecting just the information. I don't know. I think one of the great actions is you have these 8 cubes at the beginning of the game, and they're your 8 actions for the round. And you basically take one of the cubes and you use it to nominate what kind of action you're going to do. And it's good because you have 3 rows. And if you pick up one of the rows, it starts at the right-hand side of the farthest card you've got in that row. And you do the action
from
that row you picked. And then it moves down. And if it lands on a certain card where it can be activated, then that ability goes off and it keeps going down until it gets to the end of the track.
Which is good. If you're clever, you can build nice little chains.
Yes, you can build a nice little engine up by doing those actions.
But at the same time, you don't really have any control of that because you're essentially just drawing from 3 potential cards or a random.
Yeah, and you've got a hand of cards that you need to put down to build up this chain. But you've got to draw those out of the deck and kind of hope that you're going to get something that's quite good. Something that's going to work.
The worst kind of engine building.
Yeah.
Hope you get the card that works with this other card.
Anyway.
It just annoys me.
But once you've used up your like 8 actions, the round will end and you'll have a round scoring mode. So basically, whoever's got the most eggs on a certain type of bird or something like that, whoever gets that, you actually use your action cubes to mark off that you've got the most birds and someone else will mark off they got second most birds and blah, blah. So you actually, over 4 rounds, lose actions because you need to mark it off. So that's quite clever, but then you're hoping that you're going to build up a good engine that you don't need so many more actions because your engine's going to go off to keep producing you points or getting you more stuff or things like that. So that's quite a nice touch and things like that. But it's just kind of this card drawing because people can sit there and say, oh, why are you getting all those cards for when I really want one? Like particularly, there's end of game scoring cards. Everyone gets one at the beginning of the... Well, you get 2, but you get to pick one of the 2 and you discard the rest. Now, through the game, some birds that you play down will let you draw two more end scoring cards and pick one of those to play. And these are quite good points to have at the end of the game. So if you're not drawing those birds out of the deck to be able to play them, you could be missing out on valuable points and someone else could be running away with it. So it's that kind of thing. And as I said, I didn't get any of the passive action birds, but I still tried to make my games work for me. So I was gaining enough lots of points from other places or lots of stuff coming from points. So you've got to try and work with what you get. And sometimes it can feel like a struggle and someone's like doing really well out of it. Or sometimes it's actually working for you and you can make this work. I think it will benefit from multiple plays. And I think it will benefit from more expansions that come out and introduce different kind of concepts. But yeah, it's an all right game. Do play it, but I wouldn't say it's great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my version of Wingspan. And as far as I know, Sam is still drooling all over this. So.
Doesn't sound like my sort of game, to be honest, Joel.
No, I think you'll get frustrated with that at the element of drawing cards.
And Sam and
it's
I
basically the same as Terraforming Mars. That it's that.
Oh god.
It's similar to that.
Oh god. Nah. I'll just randomly draw from a deck of cards. Oh, you've got a good card. Oh, that's good. Maybe I'll get. Oh no, I won't. Oh, good. Or I'll get a really good one and win. It's like, well. It's only because I drew that ridiculously good card. Like, it's just stupid. Yeah.
What have you been
doing? It hurts when I lose, and it hurts me even more when I win. I think what's most annoying about that is there are so many great mechanics that we have now in games that counter that. So there's so much available and so, like, well-worked through mechanics that you can easily put into a game like that. There's just no need for that kind of laziness in design.
Sorry. What have you been playing like then?
Well, I've been playing a few things. I think I talked about the Big Book of Madness.
Yeah.
Last time. Since then I've acquired Clank in Space.
Yeah.
I've been playing a fair bit of Clank in Space, which I won't drone on about because we chat about Clank far too much. But I've had a good few games of that have been really quite interesting, really quite varied, really quite fun. It's really interesting now playing quite a few games with a variation in board, how much the board can really influence how the game's going to be.
Yeah.
It can really influence how quick or how slow it's going to be. It still suffers a little bit from that. If the amazing card comes up on not your turn, then the other person's got such a huge advantage from the start. But I think the nature of that game is such that it's kind of fun and wacky and tense, that it's kind of that kind of luck element doesn't bother me so much to it. I think I just write it off as, you know, it's all luck and it's all a bit of fun. And sure, you know, you can make some decisions in there, but you know, most of the time, you know, if you're drawing up five cards and you have to use all five cards, you can't keep any or anything like that. You know, it's essentially luck, but you've got to make do with the best luck that gets dealt to you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
With an element of being able to stack it in your favor. I really have fun playing that. I find it amusing. I find the art and the on the cards and the writing on the cards very funny. And I think it's cool. And I must have played at least four or five games now, and every single one has been completely different. I've done completely different things. Mm-hmm. And had fun every time, and I think there's multiple paths to victory that all seem pretty equal to me, so I had a good time with that. And then I've also been playing Lord of the Diangler, or for those people who want to call it by its printed name,
mm-hmm.
Which is was it Dice Fishing Roll and Catch, isn't it? That's what it's called, isn't it? Or is it Roll and Catch Dice Fishing, one of the two,
something like that. Yeah
And that's a kind of again, a luck betting type game where you've got to sort of catch fish in the middle using a selection of dice, and the player who you've got to get a certain number to catch the fish, and the person who bets the least number of dice to try and get that number, it gets to have a chance first. But obviously, the less dice you've got, the more chance you've got of not getting it. And it's quick, it's fun, and we've played quite a few games of that. And, you know, it's a good one that I'm playing with my wife's parents who are here, and my wife. And, it means that I don't win every time, and the wins get spread out, so that keeps them interested. Mainly because I'm far too much of a gambler. So sometimes I win big and sometimes I don't win at all. I find that really fun. It feels like you've got more control than you probably have, but it's a good push your luck type game. I do enjoy a good bit of push your luck. That's probably it. I played a couple of games of Seven Wonders Duel, but probably going to play more of that when it's just my wife and I, when the family go home. So I've played a few bits. I've had some fun with them. I haven't quite found a new board gaming group here. I've been to one, but it's a bit far away. I've been accepted into a Facebook group for another, but it's just getting the time with work troubles to get out there.
At least you are getting some gaming in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good thing your wife likes games.
Yeah, that is very lucky. If she didn't, I'd be completely bereft.
Yeah, I do know some friends that partners do not like playing board games, so I think they would have been a bit stir crazy by now.
Yeah, I mean, as I've stated, I'm pretty sure that'd be grounds for divorce.
I don't think Sam would be allowed to do that.
Although having said that, after our last game of Clank in Space, my wife has now officially told me she's never playing it again because it's stupid. Because she died and wasn't even in the cargo bay. So in Clank in Space, if you die, you don't get any points unless you're just about to get out or you get out.
Yeah.
And she was not just about in the room where you're just about to get out. So that means that she got no points, and she was pretty angry that she spent the last hour and achieved nothing.
Oh, bless.
I think she'll come round, but it may take a while.
Yeah. The other game I want to talk about, I've only played this once. And I wanted to play it because I've heard like people raving about this game. It's like the next best worker placement game ever, and its counterpart is coming out. It's out on Kickstarter as I speak at the minute, and that is Architects of the West Kingdom by Garfield Games. Yes, I've heard about that. So this is interesting. I mean, I love it's bright, it's colourful, it's getting a good cred for making these kind of games. And this one is it's like a normal thing. It's worker placement. You put someone down, you get a resource, and then you can go off and build a cathedral, get workers in your tableau to help you a bit more. But it does do something different where you have 20 workers at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And as you put your workers out in an area, the more workers of yours you have in an area you keep going to, the more rewards you'll reap. So, say if I put I put a worker out in a quarry, it might say, get one stone plus one more stone for every worker here. So if I put one there, I get one stone, if that works out right. Now, if I put another worker there on my next turn, because I get one stone already for putting a worker there, but I now get one extra stone because there's a worker there. And I can keep doing that, and I could keep coming away with lots of goods.
That's a bit like, what's that game? Was it like High Society or Chivalry? That worker placement game that we played that just didn't seem very well balanced. You know, where you build the buildings on the spots?
Right.
And that was when you rolled dice and things. What was that one? Do you remember that?
Oh, I think I know what you mean.
What was that called? It was like High Society or...
High Society was a card game.
Yeah, well, no, I know that's... it was something like that, like...
Are you thinking of Euphoria?
No. It was like medieval... And you remember you rolled dice and then you had to put like higher or lower than the dice before, and And then you could build buildings, but buildings were like nigh on impossible to build. But then, like you say, when you had, if you built the building there, you got a bonus if anyone else did it or if you went there in the future.
All right. No, I kind of vaguely think I know what you are. And if you know what he's talking about, please send us a comment.
Gone from my brain.
It'll probably pop back in a minute. I'll wait for you to shout in. So yeah, that's a good concept. So you can keep going there and keep reaping. That's most of the spots around this land do that. There's a couple that don't allow you to do that. But the trick is, if you go to the inn, I think it is, basically put a worker in there, you can go to an area and kidnap other people's workers and take them and hold them to ransom. Or you could actually kidnap your own people and bring them back. A way of bringing your workers back. You can then go to, if you've got people's workers, you can then go to the castle, put a worker in the castle area and put like one set of workers in per person you've already got at the castle and get a coin back for each person you put in the dungeon. Now that person who's got people in the dungeon, go to the dungeon with a worker and get their people out for free. So, or if people have got a lot of your workers and they don't seem to be putting them into the dungeon yet, you can actually go to this castle still and pay something like 6 coins to get all your workers back off of someone so you can reuse them again. So it's a quite nice interest, and there's this whole thing of you're getting resources to build part of this cathedral part, and as you do, you get more out of it, and there's like points to be earned and things going on. There's quite a lot going on, but it's actually quite simple in many respects as a worker placement. The thing that really oiked me about this was a certain person that was playing with us, and I've never played a game with him before. It was at Monday Night Club in Plymouth, and he sat to my right, and he had 4 of my guys on his board, and he had those from most of the game. He went to the dungeon several times and wouldn't let go of my guys. And I kind of said, I am not paying 6 coins to the bank to have 4 guys back. It doesn't seem worth it. And I thought, at some point, he's going to have to let go of those guys. And he didn't. He just sat on them. And he went to the castle and he put everyone else's people back in the dungeon. And he wouldn't put mine back in there for some reason. And the guys whose game it was, he was sat to my left or opposite me. And he kind of got a sense there was a bit of like tension then brewing between us because he was deliberately not doing it. And he could see I was getting a little bit more annoyed with him because he wouldn't put my people back in there. And he even said at one point, he goes, oh, I'm going to go to the dungeon next. I'm going to put your people in there because I don't really need them. And he didn't do it. He kept on like teasing me, saying, oh yeah, I'm going to go and do this. Next time around, I'll put yours back in. I was like, you're deliberately doing this. And I don't know if he's playing like the gamification way of your person on the left of you is like your biggest opponent. So don't give him any kind of like the Puerto Rico kind of strategy.
Maybe he played too much Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and it felt like he was playing it like that because I was on his left, that he weren't going to give up stuff that I need.
So did he get something if he put your people in the dungeon?
Yeah, he'd get coins. So he would have got like 4 coins, which is actually quite a lot of money. But he was he would go to dungeon and put everybody else's, like the other 2 players' people in there and get money for it, or get his people out the dungeon. And at some point, because he wasn't putting his in, and this is at the beginning of the game, I had about 7 of his people, because I thought, fine, I'll just keep playing. And he just went to a dungeon and paid the 6 coins to get his people back, which was actually kind of worth it for him, in a way.
That's probably why he did it to you then, was it? Revenge?
No, because he had my people first. Well, actually, I have to say, I was the first one to go out and start taking people, because he was one that was like, building up a spot and getting lots of resources. So I thought, well, the point of the game is go to the inn and kidnap people to stop them gaining lots of resources.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then he did the same to me. And so, and then I went back and I was like, oh, he started building up over there again. So I took a few more. So I had a few more than him. And like at some point, I was like, well, either I sit here withholding them and it might have to pay for a minute, or I go to the dungeon and put them in. And I think I just waited. He said he was going to put mine in. I didn't believe him, which I was right to believe. And as it came round to him, he went to the dungeon, paid his money to the bank, and got his people back. And then he just sat there on my people. And it's like, why are you doing that? You don't actually benefit from it, except for you're just making it a little bit more difficult for me to put mine out.
Did it hurt his game?
I hurt his game right at the very end. So in the end, I got so annoyed with him that I was deliberately going to the inn and just kidnapping his people. Wherever he put his people, I was just kidnapping, just to make a point of it. And I think I had about 8 people when it got to the last round. And then I went to the dungeon and put all his people in there. So I came away with about 9 or 10 coins.
Yeah.
Which benefited me, because at the end of the game, you get a point for every 10 coins you have. And made it worse for him, because every person you have in the dungeon at the end of the game, you lose a point. And it actually lost him the win by me doing that.
Really?
I felt quite happy about that. I lost. I came dead last. But the fact that he didn't win because I'd done what I did to him, he didn't come first.
Made you satisfied.
So I was quite satisfied with that.
But it's odd that he was close. Like, he could do something like that and just keep your people the whole time.
I mean, I could have got my people back if I was willing to pay the 6 coin rate for it.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to.
Because he'd only taken a few people, but not enough, it wasn't worth your money.
No.
So was it a good game overall?
Sorry?
Was it a good game overall?
I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if that wasn't going on. And like the chap that owns the game, because I played a couple now and I've never seen someone do that before.
Yeah. What did the guy say at the end then?
Nothing much. I think he walked off and went and played something else. Luckily.
How strange.
So yeah. I think we'll want to play it again and just see what it's like when someone's not being a dick towards me. But
I can't think why you would do that.
Yeah, I said to the chap at the end, I said, I was actually taking it very personal towards the end because he was just deliberately holding on to my people.
Why?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And don't build a cathedral, it doesn't actually get you a lot of points. I went with the realm of building the cathedral, and then I got the first one to the top, and then I kind of sat there going, actually, was it really worth it? Where everyone else has got like putting people out and building actually other buildings and things like that, and I was just like, yeah, it probably wasn't worth it. I've probably lost the game if I'm doing that. So, but yeah,
a game about building a cathedral where you shouldn't build a cathedral. That's worrying.
And when I built the cathedral, I was actually quite happy. And I was like, well, I can't actually do much more but just try and be a dick back to the dick next to me. So that's when I was going around kidnapping all these people. Oh, you put one over in the woods. Oh, I'm just going to go to the inn and kidnap him. and it was quite good, because then I actually kidnapped my own people back from the inn just to so I can go keep going around. that's Architects of the West Kingdom. Paladins of the West Kingdom is
Paladins. It's like a strong knight to paladin.
Yep. Paladins of the West Kingdom is also out on Kickstarter. I don't know if it's worth it. You get a few cards. They don't do like stretch goals, I don't think.
No, I don't know.
But they just do like a few bonus cards that you get for backing the Kickstarter. So you might as well wait for it when it comes out in retail.
play it first and make sure you don't play it with someone who's going to be dickish.
Yeah,
I have some concerns about the fact that a player can do that, and it didn't seem to, because normally a lot of games have got the built-in mechanic that if you make a dick move, it's normally hurting both you and the other person.
Yeah.
So it's a bit worrying that that game doesn't seem, he was that close to winning, and if you hadn't just completely turned on him through frustration, he could have ended up winning having made that dick move all game.
Having those people was not affecting him. I mean, it just took him like an action to go waste a dude in the inn and pick up my guys. I mean, the more people you have at the inn, the more groups of people you can pick out of an area. So if you've got two people there, you can actually take two groups out of an area. And the same thing if you go to the castle and you've got like three guys already, you've now got three guys at the castle, you can like put two groups into the dungeon and take yours out of the dungeon as actions.
Yeah.
So
I think obviously he didn't, maybe the money reward for putting people into a dungeon needs to be higher.
Or you've actually got spaces. I'll just think about now. You actually got spaces on your board, and when you start filling up these spaces with other people's spaces, you ain't got room to bring your people back.
Yeah, that would work as well.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I've been playing lots more other games, and I'll probably hopefully hold it for another podcast that we probably do in 2022 and go from there. So, new stuff that's been announced on the horizon. Have you heard any new stuff?
I'm trying to think. There's been a few Kickstarters recently. What have you heard?
I heard Dune is being reprinted.
Oh, that famous Grail game.
Yes.
Well, see, my first ever computer game that I played was Dune 2, which was the strategy computer game, which was basically the precursor to Command & Conquer.
Yeah.
So I do have a bit of an affinity for the Dune genre, but I couldn't get on with the film at all.
I've never seen the film. I've not read the book. So
no, I've not read it either.
But they're meant to be redoing the film as well.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, rebooting the film.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So Gale Force 9 is bringing out Dune the board game again.
Yeah.
So that might excite some. I know it's excited Sam because it's been one of the games he's been after for a while.
Yeah.
So he did buy a Dune game. I remember seeing it on his shelf and I was like, that's not the one that everyone wants. He goes, no, it's actually far worse than that. It's some kind of Wellington game that is basically a roller move with Dune plastered on it. So I think he's tried to sell it recently. I think he said he kind of it's fun for like the tongue-in-cheek kind of this is terrible kind of fun kind of game, but yeah. So yeah, Dune is coming out. I don't know when it's coming out. I've not really read much into it, not really bothered in a way.
No.
It's not been a game that is like, I've actually seen it. I've been to a couple of fairs or like comic conventions. I've actually seen like a couple of copies, and they were like, I think it was selling for about £25-30.
Yeah,
I think I did remember seeing said, "Oh, piece is missing." So I was like, "Ah, well, not worth it."
There you go. I tell you a game I did see that is coming out, which I think is coming out this month. Actually, might have just come out. I think it was kickstarted, and it's a Martin Wallace game, and it's based on Martin Wallace's The Land of the Long White Cloud, which our New Zealand was referenced in by Captain Cook, I believe, when he sailed past, which fits because it's always cloudy here. And it sort of took my eye because it's sort of based in New Zealand. And I'll quote you what it says on its description. So it's called Moa, and Moa were giant birds that lived in New Zealand before human inhabitants arrived and hunted them to I can't say the word. 2 early in the morning. So it says, Moa takes its inspiration from the events surrounding the settlement of New Zealand, recasting them with anthropomorphized birds and mammals. The inhabitants of the Pacific Islands are represented by giant birds, such as the Moa and Kakapo, while the settlers from the west are played by dogs, rats, possums, and weasels. Now, the problem I have with this is, since I've been here, I've obviously talked to quite a few people who would count as the Pacific Island inhabitants, so the Maori people. And I've been to I've been over to Wellington, and I've been to the Cultural History Museum there, and had talks and tours from sort of Maori representatives. And I think the thing that annoys me most about the game is how factually incorrect it seems to be casting things. And I mean, so the first just thing to say is that the Moa, who are cast as who the Maori people are cast as, were actually hunted to extinction by the Maori people before any of the European settlers arrived, and I'm not overly sure that the Maori people would be keen to have their history and culture so easily whitewashed. It's kind of like they've gone too far in the kind of reverse kind of settlement kind of side of things. The Maori people sort of take their impact on nature and the world quite seriously, and they take their history quite seriously as well, including all the bad bits. And I'm not quite sure, and they're, you know, they're rightly quite proud and peaceful and successful people, and I'm not convinced that they would be pleased that they've that their even negative impact on the island of New Zealand, islands of New Zealand, would be so easily and quickly whitewashed to maintain some sort of anti-colonial narrative. And I just read it and I think, gosh, that is, it's truly, truly awful. I just do wonder if they were any Maori people were consulted on that, because it does make me wonder. And I'm not normally one who gets too excited by that sort of theme and things. I know that people get very excited and it all fits the anti-colonial rhetoric, and I'm not at all saying, oh yes, we should colonize the colonies and the empire was great, but I'm not quite sure that the idea of whitewashing over the history of a native or an earlier inhabitant of an area is at all justified either. They have whole sort of sections in their cultural history museum talking about their impact on New Zealand, about how the Maori people sort of wiped out the Moa through hunting, and there was extensive deforestation under the Maori people of the islands of New Zealand, which but did get significantly worse with the European settlers. But the Maori people are just as aware of their impact as they are on blaming other people, and they take responsibility for their historic actions, and they're not people who shy away from that. And I'm not convinced that they would, like I say, enjoy being so shoehorned into the position. And there's all sorts of other bit as well. Like, players take on the role of the defenders of the land, competing with their fellow players for control of the regions while staving off the advances of the mammals. However, the cunning bird may consider selling their land to mammals rather than fighting to defend it. Now, the Maori people signed a treaty and agreement with excuse me, with the British Empire, and and put them, which gave them full citizenship and rights under the British Empire. So they were far more, they were very clever and very shrewd, and that meant that they were never conquered in that way, and they had full rights as a citizen of the British Empire at the time, and therefore the only way of getting land was to buy it off them. Now, there were plenty of occasions when European settlers essentially tricked and to all sense and purposes, essentially robbed the Maori people, and by through twists of the law and mistranslations and things like that. But again, I don't think setting it up as the idea of some sort of militaristic conquering, which never happened, is really appropriate. Mm. I have a lot of issues with how factually incorrect the representation of New Zealand is in the game, or from its description. As I say, I've not played it, but certainly it looks a bit concerning that things could be so whitewashed.
Mm. So is it just the fact that they're just kind of going with the fact that the British are quite well known for just finding land and claiming it for themselves? So they
exactly
everyone's perception is that that's what happened everywhere. We went everywhere, we claimed everything, and we made out the originals.
And that's not an unfair narrative to maintain in games, and I've got no problem with that being pushed across. But I think where you're sort of boiling things down to such simplicity that you've kind of created a very proud and peace loving and shrewd people, you boil them down to a kind of caricature, I think is kind of wrong. It's the fact that they cast as the moa, which was the giant birds. I mean, like I said, they were extinct before Europe, hundreds of years before the European settlers even arrived in New Zealand, or New Zealand existed, and they were hunted to extinction by the Maori people, which the Maori people are not proud of, but it is part of their history. And I think it's almost culturally insensitive to do something like that. I find it very strange.
Mm. So someone that's not done their full research and they've just taken, let's take this, this works, this usually is what happens in the world.
Yeah. There was some giant birds in New Zealand. They got wiped out by humans. That was probably the colonists. Just like, well, yeah, that was probably European settlers. Well, no, it wasn't actually. And I don't think that's fair to.
Wow.
Wipe. Yeah.
As I say, that us British have got a very checkered past about when we realized we could sail around the world and find new stuff and take over land. Yeah. So.
And I'm not a defender of those actions at all. No. And I don't think that, but at the same time, I wouldn't want my history whitewashed. It's something that happened, and it is my cultural history, but I wouldn't want it twisted and lied about, to take away that, element,
No.
And I can only imagine that the, Maori people from what I've seen, feel the same.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Lewis, for bringing down the mood.
Okay. No worries. No worries.
I was all happy and cheerful, and then you.
Well, I thought it was New Zealand relevant, so I thought that was good.
I ain't got a heart of stone, but we're going to move on because we're running out of time. But interesting subject. Well, thanks for bringing it up. Bringing back to some exciting news, Fireball Island has a new expansion coming out.
Another one.
Yes.
Mail kit.
Spider Springs, it's called. It is another separate, well, it's not a separate board. It's a extra tray / player board or board that actually attached to the original island. I know you've not really played yours.
I haven't.
But, there's the two side bits and there's the middle bit that sits on top of them.
I do.
And there was that kind of gap at the front and the back. Well, this will fit in the front gap of your island, bringing in a kind of new bit pathway they can get around. As it says, spiders on there. There's a spring.
But when I read it, it says you still get to it through tunnels or caves.
Yeah. So I think you do.
It's just that you can clip it on the side of the board, but it doesn't make any difference because you don't get there directly.
Yeah, I think that's right. Now you saying that. So it's a bit odd that they said, it clips on here. Yeah, I don't think there's any way down. by the looks of it. There's a cool spring-loaded mechanic bit in it where if a marble lands on this thing and triggers it, it springs all these spiders up in the air, and if they land on you, then they're negative points. But you're running around there trying to collect their eggs because they're worth points. There's another snapshot area for you to get to. And there's another way of getting off the island if you miss the boat. Well, no, not the boat, the helicopter. You can jump on a boat, a U-boat or submarine, and get off the island that way. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a few more extra bits, possibly. New cards and new stuff coming with it. But the kind of good news is this is not coming to Kickstarter.
Oh.
They are going straight to retail.
Straight to retail.
Because I think they realised they effed it up so much the first time.
Yes.
Which helps me because I've gone on the comments so many times and said, I am not going to back anymore what they've done. They've messed up this Kickstarter so much that I refuse to back it. So I'm so glad it's coming straight to retail.
What problems did you have with the Kickstarter?
Don't get me started on this.
What, it just took forever to come?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Kickstarter.
Christoph had it in his shop about the same time yours sent to your brothers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was annoying for you. I got mine.
Yeah, yours is sat at your brother's, unopened.
No, they've played it now.
Oh, they played it, have they?
Yeah, yeah.
And mine was still sat in, not Chaos Cards, some other distribution. And, for ages. So,
yeah, that's pretty bad going into retail before you get it to your backers. That's like an unwritten no-no, isn't it?
But it's all right because apparently I should be grateful because I got these fabulous extra marbles that are the worst marbles I've ever seen.
There was some sort of issue with the marbles, wasn't there? Like when they were trying to find them, they couldn't find the ones they wanted, and they sounded like they're lumped.
Do you know what? I went to House of Marbles and picked up my own marbles now.
No, really?
Yeah.
It is lucky living next to a marble museum, isn't it?
Yeah. So I picked up some of those to add to my game to make it a lot better. So,
yeah.
But anyway, moving along. I am excited about this expansion and hopefully get it very soon. Die Hard. Do you love Die Hard, the movie?
I absolutely love Die Hard.
Wow, you're going to love this.
I grew up with Die Hard.
They're bringing out a board game.
Which film? The first one.
The first one. It's like Die Hard, something, the Nakasia Tower.
Yeah, that's the first one. Yeah.
What's it called? Die Hard. Die Hard, the Nakatomi heist board game?
Nakatomi?
Yeah.
Yes.
Being done by USA Opoly. Those fine people behind Telestrations, licensed Codename Games, and Talisman Kingdom Hearts Edition.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
I do hope. The box looks pretty cool. I like the look of the box cover.
Oh, there's no picture or anything yet. It's literally just the box cover.
Yeah.
And one versus many. Details,
possibly. No details of what's going on that I can see. But this is just hit. This is just off the press. So it came out today.
I'm exciting. Excited.
I'll give it a chance. See what's going on.
I love Die Hard.
Fun Forge has announced a sequel to Takedo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like Takedo.
Namig. It's in the script. Help me out here, Lewis. It's in the script. Help me out here.
Your Japanese is exceptional. I was just leaving. It looks like it's called Namiji.
Namiji. Sounds better. So this is sounds quite cool. It's saying the same concept as the original, but you're boating around this lake or something like that. But there's lots of islands around it. And it's got the same movement. If you go further than other people, you have to wait for them to catch up. but you might have first dibs of what's going on this island. And each island has its own different characteristic, where you go to one place and be a shrimping place, it's called, and pushing a luck, drawing out of a bag to gain points. Or you go fishing and flip over fish tokens, one for you and one for the public. Yeah, in that concept. Yeah.
Yeah.
This other one sounds like it's like memory card game. So you draw up two tiles, and if they match, you keep them or something like that. There's lots of different things going on with this and trying to gain points, and it sounds really intriguing.
Like a board game version of Mario Party.
Yes.
Lots of little mini games that you go around and do.
Yes. Definitely.
With Takaru's action thing, way of doing things.
Out like, later on this year, it's called. It's announced. So yeah.
Well, that has piqued my interest.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. Namiji. And...
I still cannot remember the name of that blinking game, Joel. Do you remember? It's called, like, it was like medieval, and you rolled dice. You had it. You got it. Maybe from Kickstarter.
Right.
And you have to roll dice, and then you, like, you also had little cards of, like, little people that you had that could be, like, orcs or other things like that.
Right.
And if you went to, like, the White Tower, you got another dice or something?
Oh, it was a terrible game, wasn't it? You hated it.
Yeah. It was so unbalanced. I loved loads of stuff in it, but it just didn't work.
It was a Kickstarter. Similar like
Royal
artwork.
Court?
Sorry?
Royal Court or something, or High Society, or...
You're on the lines, yeah. I can't think now.
Well, at least you can remember which game. At least you remember the game exists now, so I'm not going mad.
No, was it Lords or something like that?
Something like that.
Oh, I'll drop it in here if we can't think what it is.
You've got it on your shelf, haven't you?
No, I got rid of it.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, it took way too long to play.
Yeah. And it just, like, it had loads of really interesting, clever mechanics to it, but... It just didn't work because you could never get the buildings with the right things at the same time.
Just looking. See if I can see it quickly.
Okay.
The games played. I think I've gone way too far back now.
Well, it was a good 2 years ago, I reckon.
Was it? No, it was last year. I had it before Heaven and Hell, so it must be before this.
Yeah, it's before Heaven and Hell.
Rise to Nobility.
Rise to Nobility. I knew it was something about High Society or Right or Big High. I knew it was something about Royal Court.
I think we've started that off already.
That's made me feel so much better. Don't ever buy that game. It's awful. But now I remember. It's fine.
Oh, they brought out a second edition, didn't they, on Kickstarter? And
did they?
Yeah, it did very well.
Really?
No one listened to us.
Did they fix it?
No, of course they didn't fix it. They gave it an expansion, make it even longer.
What? It's awful.
So we normally do Kickstarters at this point, but at the minute, I'm currently not backing anything, and nothing's really taking my interest.
Not even Chocolate Factory.
Well, that's finished.
I know. You were still late backing, though.
But I think probably last week I had about 4 Kickstarters going.
Can you cancel them?
No, I've backed them all.
Right.
So I did do. Trying to think who's done it now. Renegade Games. I've done their Terra Below. That looked quite interesting. It's basically Tremors.
Yeah.
Tremors, the board game.
Okay, yeah.
So back that. Looking forward to that when that's coming out. Alone, second print run. I'd done that for the expansion. Yeah. Even though I've not really played the first one.
Yeah.
But I quite like the concept of it. Chocolate Factory from the good people of Alley Cat Games. Anyway. So yes, I backed Chocolate Factory from our good friends Alley Cat Games, and this looks quite intriguing. I like the concept. It's a kind of conveyor belt system that's being pushed along, and you're creating little chocolate pieces to sell to people, and that good old Euro gamer kind of building your engine to make your chocolate better.
Yeah, and it's by the same designer who did was not Jamaica Vikings as well.
How was it?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, same designer, Vikings, and also who did is it Matthew Dunstan and Brett Gilbert? They're the designers who did Jamaica together, Vikings together, and they also Matthew Dunstan designed Monumental, which I haven't played yet, but I backed on Kickstarter. Very excited for that one.
Yeah,
and he certainly from a couple of games I played, they're really brilliant. And just taking one or two little mechanics and just making them really tight and work really well, and it's just kind of like a really satisfying play, like game to play. Everything feels really tight, and there's always like hidden depths to it that you have to play a couple of games and you suddenly go, oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
No, it does seem, yeah. I mean, I think Alley Cat Games is one of these up-and-coming, promising now British design companies. They're really taking...
They did Dice Hospital as well, didn't they? Yeah. Which you quite like.
Yeah, Mrs. loves that game. And they've got an expansion coming out for that soon. So
have they?
Yes. Couple of expansions put on.
I think I got a little grumpy when we played that one, didn't I? Because I made a mistake and got pretty happy for it.
I think you were just sad because you were leaving us. It was your last
game. It was my last game in the UK.
Well, it's Tiny Epic Tactics. I don't know why I backed this. I backed it and then I'm kind of thinking, oh. But anyway.
Yeah. They're always all right, those Tiny Epics.
Yeah. I still like the Tiny Epic Zombies I got. I think that's quite cool. It seems a bit easy.
Yeah, we had fun playing that.
Yeah. Co-op seems a bit easy, but maybe it just needs to be tightened up a bit. And last thing I did this one is Pursuit of Happiness Expansion Experiences.
Oh, boo.
I love this game. So this is great little expansion, and they done very well with this Kickstarter. That they unlocked more than they expected to. I think they were kind of scrambling around at the end of, what can we do? What can we add in kind of thing? But this one comes with like a kind of experience board. So kind of like things you want to do while you're living life and go out there and explore it. But then it also introduces this new little attachment bit called kids. So when you finally... have a relationship with someone and then you decide to have a family. When you decide to have a family, you draw a kid card up and then you've got to kind of every round they get older and they give you stuff or you have to give them stuff, I believe. Let me find a kid card because it was in there and I can probably not tell you from that. I probably have to look in the updates. But when I looked at the updates and they explained what the kid cards did, I was like, that's quite clever. Actually feels like you're actually bringing up little brats. I mean, kids. what do they do? Here they are. So the cube moves down as normal from each round. So like when they're born, you get a victory point, and then it moves down, and I think you have to give them. Just trying to see now. When it moves down, they become a teenager, and you get a couple of resources, but it also give you stress, of course, and then you get free victory points. And then they grow up, and you discard this to discard an incomplete project, and they grow up, and you become sad, but you get 5 victory points. in a way. Mm. So just adds there more points to you. So that's quite cool. Is that, I think everyone's been calling out for us. We have a family, but we don't actually have any kids.
Yeah.
So this is kind of nice little add-on bit.
Good. More overly complex for a simple, dull game.
Oh, it's not dull. I think it's great. You just make your own life up. You make up, it's just like playing Second Life on the computer game. Or
Yeah. It all felt a bit finickety to me.
It's a bit.
Is that the one with the little sand timers, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think once you realise like how it's actually quite thematic, I think, really.
It's definitely very thematic, but it lacks a lot of the game for me.
Maybe this add more game for you.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to give it a try when I'm back.
So, yeah. So, after backing 5 projects at once, and now not backing anymore for a bit. I think the wife would kill me if she found out how much Kickstarter I've just backed. And then I won Meeple's Corner. Meeple's Corner do a auction every Friday till Monday of probably a load of titles he needs to get rid of, but he puts them up for auction starting at a price, and I did win but one of the most expensive games he has on his shop thing for about half price, which was
what did you win?
Gen 7.
Not heard of that.
It's a plaid hat game. It's a crossroads game, so it uses the same mechanics as Dead of Winter with the crossroads cards, but you're trapped, you're in space, and you're like the 7th generation of a 14th generation travel from one planet to the next.
Okay, yeah.
But things are now happening that are a bit going on, so in this bit. So you kind of just got to kind of do the best you can. And things are going off and things are happening, and it's like a 10 or 12 story campaign. Thing is, it's like recommended retail price is like £90.
What?
Yeah. And there's not much, there's no miniatures or anything in it.
Wow.
So I picked it up for about half price off the auction.
Nice. Save it for me.
Maybe. Maybe the way things are going, it probably will be by the time you get back. So, quite happy with that. Always check out his special offers and his auction every Friday on Facebook. So,
yeah.
You can pick up some bargains that way. Anyway, I think that's it for us now. We've run over 20 minutes. The wife is probably sitting there, probably watching a Holby City. Still. Anyway, and so yes, that is another podcast from us, the Devon Dice crew. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned, because we might put another one out next month. You never know, you might be lucky. I've been Joel Wright. You find me on Twitter at Devon Dice UK,
and I've been Lewis Jones, and you can find me on Twitter at the_brewery tour.
Yes, you can. Thank you, Lewis, for taking time out of your busy sunny life in New Zealand.
It's not that sunny today, it's pretty cloudy, but thank you for having me again.
There you are, bringing down the atmosphere again. Anyway, yes, thank you, good night, see you next time.
Bye bye.
From the good people of Alley Cat Games.
Yeah, and that was by the same designer who did Jamaica, wasn't it?
You're going to toilet.
No.
I can't believe this. Really can't believe it.
Just woken up, we've been talking for like over an hour.
That's why I'm trying to speed it up.
All right, hang on, wait.
Yeah, I'm done.
Uh
Right. Start again from Chocolate Factory.
It'd make a great outtake.